left of class for this quarter. Of course, we're doing the same thing next quarter, too, so hope y'all don't mind that. But we have three more Wednesdays in this quarter, plus the monthly quarterly singing night. So that reminds me, Bible teacher sign-up list is out there on the foyer. Please, please find a slot, put your name down. We need teachers. And Bible school material is in. We will divvy it all up and have it ready for pickup on Sunday. So that's that. But we have just enough time left together in this first quarter of Old Testament survey for us to do some cool things yet. We're going to tonight dip our toe into the northern kingdom of the children of Israel. That sounds fun. Next week, we'll dip our toe into the southern kingdom of the children of Israel. And then week after that, we will time hop forward a little bit to look at Nebuchadnezzar's famous dream about kingdoms of the world. And that will be a nice breaking point for us here in quarter number one. But don't worry, we're going to come back in quarter number two, March, and pick up and dig in a little deeper into our Old Testament survey. That will be, just to kind of preview that will be kind of a closer look at some of the prophets and their messages. And we'll talk about exciting things like the pre-exilic prophets and the post-exilic prophets and the rebuilding of the temple. Cool stuff. Hope you're excited about it. I'm looking forward to it. Before we do all of that, though, we got to talk about these northern and southern kingdoms, y'all. Last week, we looked at the United Kingdom of the children of Israel, and not to belabor that point, but just to kind of make sure we're all on the same page. We had king number one was who? King number one was who? Saul. And he was a big flop. King number two was David, and he was really, really, really good. King number three was Solomon. And this is about 100-year period in Israel's history where things were good, things were calm, cats were playing with dogs, everyone had enough to eat, I mean, temples were being built, presents were being given. This was a nice time, maybe not so much the David, you know, going to war with everybody part, but this was a nice time in Israel's history. After the militaristic conquests of David, who was a fantastic warring king, Israel enjoyed a peace dividend for about four decades. And when it came time for Solomon's son was named what? Rehoboam. When it came time for Solomon's son Rehoboam to sit on the throne, there was a bit of a kerfuffle. For the first time in a long time, there was an opposition candidate who dared to attempt to primary Mr. Rehoboam, who had, you know, the rights to the kingdom. I mean, it was his for the taking. This is the whole nature of dynasties. Don't you get it? You know, Solomon's son took after, David's son took over after him. Solomon's son's supposed to take over after Solomon. That's the way it's supposed to work. They had everything going according to plan. Only the spoiler of the moment was Jeroboam. Jeroboam strategically started to let the people know how unhappy he was and how unhappy he thought he would continue to be under a king, Rehoboam. And Jeroboam was starting to say things like, wouldn't it be nice if, we had another king to pick? Wouldn't it be nice if we had a choice to make? We free-thinking people, wouldn't it be nice if we had a choice to make? And if I were king, Jeroboam continued to think out loud and say, if I were king, I would give everyone, 3-day weekends. Kind of like the kid in elementary school running for class president, ice cream before lunch, no homework every day, recess longer, just kind of, it's easy to be the guy making promises when you're not the guy who has to do the things, you know what I mean? So Jeroboam is just kind of idyllically thinking aloud. Really, it's a little more insidious than that. He's not just thinking aloud. He's plotting how he is going to become the next king. And so sure enough, when Rehoboam decides that he's going to step right in Solomon's place and be king, and by the way, as we closed out last week's class, Rehoboam had already indicated to the people that he would be what kind of king, because the people came to Rehoboam to ask him, what kind of king are you going to be? And remember, Rehoboam sought counsel with the older folks, who told him what, by the way? The older folks that Rehoboam went to, they told him, do what? Kind of calm down a little bit, Let's don't go so hard on the people. Because while Israel was enjoying the peace dividend, Solomon was putting everyone to work. This kingdom had expanded under David's kingdom. But now Solomon had instituted great infrastructure projects. He was physically beautifying the kingdom on the backs of the people who were doing all the work. So they would like a little bit of a break. But Rehoboam says, no break for you. As a matter of fact, if you thought Solomon was hard on you, you ain't seen nothing yet. And Rehoboam, whether he knew it or not, was sowing the seeds that would soon grow into division among the kingdom. So Jeroboam succeeds in pulling away the majority of the people to be king over. And these tribes that follow Jeroboam were about 10 in number. So we're talking how many tribes? How many tribes of the children of Israel are there? 12. So 10 of them seceded and went with Jeroboam. And it's a whole lot easier to keep up with the 2 that didn't than the 10 that did. So that leaves 2 remaining tribes that kind of by default, I reckon, were the southern kingdom. Yes, and the Levitical priesthood had what am I trying to say? They had occupation in both. So the Levitical priesthood is a little bit of a footnote because they did have claim, they did have stake in both. So the 2 tribes in the south were Judah and Benjamin. The northern kingdom, is very infrequently referred to as the Northern Kingdom, right? This is our kind of Bible study language that we're using to better understand what's going on here. The northern kingdom is most frequently referred to quite simply as Israel because, well, they had 10 of the 12 tribes. I mean, it was the majority of the people of Israel. The majority of the children of Israel went in to this northern kingdom situation. So as you read in your scriptures, you will find frequently this group of God's people simply being referred to as Israel. Israel, 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 Israel. Because, again, 10 of the 12 tribes made it up. The southern kingdom, again, is very infrequently referred to as the southern kingdom. That's a Bible study label that we give to this segment of God's people. The southern kingdom is most frequently referred to simply as Judah. Judah being the more popular, more prominent of the two tribes that made up the southern kingdom. Sometimes the southern kingdom may be referred to as Jerusalem because the city of Jerusalem, the capital city of God's people, by the way, which is a point that's going to lead us right into tonight's closer look at Jeroboam's activity. The city of Jerusalem was in the possession of the southern kingdom, made up of the two tribes of Judah and Benjamin. So you'll almost always find the northern kingdom referred to as Israel, just kind of sheer majority rules kind of thing going on there. The southern kingdom will be referred to mostly by Judah. Judah, the very prominent tribe. Also Judah, the tribe through whom Jesus would eventually come. So there's that spotlight continued to be shined on that tribe. Sometimes Jerusalem, because the southern kingdom, keep this in kind of the side of your mind, the southern kingdom had Jerusalem in its jurisdiction. That's kind of a lay of the land. Sam, what you got on that, brother?
When I studied the United Kingdom and the three kingdoms, so to speak, I can't help but to see God's will in his place.
Oh, wow.
Now, the reason I said that because God sent a prophet to Jeroboam, and the prophet took a garment and threw it in his pieces.
Right.
And then God told the prophet to give 10 to Jeroboam and 2 to Rehoboam.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Certainly God knew it was coming. Yeah. Certainly. Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah, you make a good point, Sam. For sure, for sure. Look at 1 Kings chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12. Now we've got Jeroboam in charge of some stuff. And guess what? To no one's surprise, definitely not to my surprise, when you're actually in charge of things, things get a lot harder, you know? Jeroboam, before he was Mr. Hotshot King, had every answer for every question about what a king should do. It's kind of like people who always second guess the elders, let's say. You know, when they're not an elder, they have an answer for everything that an elder's supposed to do. You know, and then they become an elder, and reality sets in, and the job is a little bigger than it seems when you're just kind of looking at it from afar, and things get a little more challenging. Well, Jeroboam is a king now. He's a king. And he's a king over a massive amount of people. Again, just to make sure we don't drop any of these details along the way, 10 of the 12 tribes went with him. So he's got a lot of cats to herd. He's got a lot of people to please. After all, he campaigned on promises of making your life easier, three-day weekends for everybody, ice cream's always going to be cold. I mean, Jeroboam made a lot of campaign promises. And now that he's king, kind of reality setting in, and he's thinking, oh boy, this is maybe going to be a little harder than I thought. Jeroboam says in his heart, so this is kind of the internal monologue that's going on with the man. 1 Kings 12:26. Somebody else want to read this for? I got a little bit of water I can sip on. Somebody want to read 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 26, please? Who's got it? 1 Kings 12:26. Yes. So that little tidbit we mentioned, not a little tidbit, but that detail we mentioned earlier about the capital city being in the southern kingdom, that comes into play here. Because God's people were ordered to worship God where? In Jerusalem. Jerusalem was inside the territory and the jurisdictional boundaries of which kingdom? The southern kingdom. Yeah, Judah. Thank you, Sam. So that would mean in order to obey God, every one of Jeroboam's citizens in the north would have to leave the northern kingdom and go to Jerusalem to worship God. And this is a thought that frightens Jeroboam. Because Jeroboam thinks one of these days, they're going to go back there to worship God and not come back. They're going to return to the house of David. If they go and do their sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of the people, I'm continuing in verse 27 here, the heart of the people will turn back to their Lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me. So Jeroboam he's got some skin in the game. He is the leader of this revolt. Rehoboam didn't do himself any favors, so I'm spreading the blame equally here. But Jeroboam really kind of popped off this revolt here. And he's worried. He's worried that his kingdom will become frail and anemic if he loses people to the southern kingdom, where the city of Jerusalem is. But he's also worried, selfishly, that they might soon, or maybe not so soon, resent his role in this revolt and come and kill him and get rid of him. So Jeroboam now is faced with the real life task of leading. And he makes a choice. Every man makes a choice. You can't avoid choices, and you can't avoid the consequences of your choices. So what does Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, do here to fix his little problem? We could read it, but you know. He sets up alternate sites for the children of Israel to worship. Say it again. Yes, right. So it starts with his changing the place of worship. And then either chicken or the egg kind of situation, you know. He has these idols ready to go, so he clearly has deliberated on this decision before. But as Michael points out, there are not one, but now two golden calves 2.0 here, 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 28. Israel has had a long history with falling down and worshiping golden calves. I don't get it, but they did. They loved them some golden calves. And right here, Jeroboam has two of them, and he places them at Bethel and at Dan. So he strategically places these golden calves in accessible areas in his kingdom, right? And he describes his actions. Now, remember, King Saul described his actions as obeying God. If you kind of rewind back about 100 years or so, King Saul, first king, selected by the people, not by God. We talked about that already. But King Saul described his actions as obeying God. Well, was King Saul really obeying God? Nuh-uh, not even close. So Jeroboam here describes his actions as being very people-focused. You know, we care about people. Care about you, man, and don't want you to have to burden yourself, you know. It's too much for y'all to have to come back to church on Sunday night. No, just kidding. That's not what Jeroboam said. That's what some folks today are saying, though. In a very, 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 very close Jeroboam impression, what Jeroboam actually said was, it's too much for you to have to go to Jerusalem. Chapter 12, verse 28. You see, the reason why I'm doing this is because I care about you. And I don't want you to have to worry your pretty little heads about how you're going to get to Jerusalem. It's a long way up to Jerusalem. Again, the Bible here is not talking directionally. Up meaning north, down meaning south. The Bible, when it says go up to Jerusalem, is talking about an elevation. Jerusalem sat higher in relation to sea level than these other places. So Jeroboam, new leader of the northern kingdom, is saying, whew, you're going to get tired. Kids are going to cry. You know, imagine how many bathroom breaks you're going to have to make going to Jerusalem just to worship. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt. And whoosh, he takes the covering off of these two golden calves. And these golden calves would be put in Dan and in Bethel. And the Bible reports in verse number 30, this thing became a sin for the people. They went to worship these idol gods. Breaks your heart, doesn't it? God gave them bread from heaven. When they whined about that bread from heaven, he gave them meat. When they were thirsty, he gave them water. And this is the way they thank God. Whew. You'll begin to understand why in about 200 years, God is going to send these people a message they will never forget. God's going to let something happen to these people in about 200 years that we still talk about today, because he's tired of it. He's tired of it. Think about that the next time you think God's patience is infinite. It's just one more Sunday. I'll skip church. It's just one more day. I won't pray, or I won't worry about reading my Bible. What's one more day? I tell you, these people got in their lousy predicament of falling down and worshiping golden calves one day at a time. One responsibility that they shirked at a time. And now look at them. Matt, saw your hand. Go right ahead, bud.
All that God did for the
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Matt's a preacher, y'all. He's making those connections. Good one. Good one. You have to make a sermon about that. Yes, sir, Sam, and then Wes will come back. Yes, sir, Mr. Sam, go right ahead. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. You make a good point, Sam. Jeroboam is acting as though he's operating with the best interests of the people in mind. But in typical sleazy fashion, Jeroboam's really worried about his own skin, because he's afraid that the tables will turn on him personally, right? So fear is a major part of this. Wes, I saw your hand, and then we'll jump in and pick up some speed. Yes, sir. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I mean, they picked it up in Egypt, right? But you're right. Solomon's affinity for strange women. Is it 1 Kings chapter 11 verse 1? Look at 1 Kings 11 1. Solomon loved many foreign women. These were strictly forbidden by God for his people to marry. For this exact reason, God knew that the union between one of his people and one of not his people would have a diluting effect on that religion. Oh, of course he did. Yeah. Oh, of course. How could, of course, we're talking about Jeroboam here, not Solomon's son, but still somebody who saw Solomon's compromises in these areas. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, indeed. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. Seeing Solomon making the concessions that he made, the compromises that he made. These are more than just concessions. So this is the birth of the Northern Kingdom, as yucky and demonic of a birth as it is. And the people worshiped these golden calves per Jeroboam's instructions. Jeroboam did great wickedness in God's sight. And I want you to know tonight, as we're just kind of dipping our toe in the northern kingdom of the children of Israel, that there were 19 kings after King Jeroboam. 19. So in total, 20 kings of the northern kingdom. 20 kings of the northern kingdom. And guess how many of them were good? That's zero. Some were less bad than others, but none of them were good. And about so many of them, the Bible says he followed after the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Yes, who made Israel to sin. That's a common expression. Jeroboam did not turn from his evil, chapter 13, verse 33 says. So now we are off and running. And I want to just real quickly here give us a sense of what's going to be happening in the remaining books of history in our Old Testaments. As we flip over to 1 Kings chapter 15, 1 Kings chapter 15, we see something that we need to get more familiar with as we are in this section of Israel's history. The 18th year of King Jeroboam, Abijam became king over Judah. So this is what we have in this section. We have a lot of pinging back and forth. The 20 kings of the northern kingdom are not told in one continuous section. So at times, the focus of the Bible will shift from the northern kingdom to the southern kingdom, and then maybe back to the northern kingdom, then maybe back to the southern kingdom. This is a history book. And so we will, at many intervals have these kind of lay of the land verses, like 1 Kings 15:1, which lets us know while Jeroboam was doing his thing in the 18th year, there was a new king in Judah. So the focus, the spotlight, if you will shift back and forth. And we just have to be prepared to kind of process all of that information and understand that, that this information will kind of bounce back and forth. Sticking in 1 Kings chapter 15, we read a statement that we don't read about any of the northern kings, as we just mentioned. Asa did what was right. Yes, ma'am. Indeed. Absolutely. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as did his father David. So we have, you can chart this out or map it out to whatever extent you would like. Asa is the third king of the southern kingdom, and he is pictured here doing what's right in the eyes of God. Nadab is the second king of the northern kingdom. Nadab, Jeroboam's son, verse 25, 1 Kings 15:25, began to rule over Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah. So we have very, very kind of historical stuff. The second king of the northern kingdom, son of the first king of the northern kingdom, he began to rule over Israel. Remember what we said, how the northern kingdom will most often be referred to as Israel because they had 10 of the 12 tribes. We're seeing that exactly here. And Nadab becomes king in Asa's second year of king. So we see how, everything fits. While kings are being kings in the north, kings are being kings in the south, so the stories overlap. Did I see a hand? Wes, go right ahead. For David's sake. Mm-hmm. It goes, yes, indeed. Yeah, you have to wonder, goes back up to the comment made up here, that you read this and your mind will quickly just kind of glaze over, especially when you're dealing with the North, and you read, this is mind-numbing. The amount of wickedness and evil is just unfathomable. Why is God even putting up with this? Well, once upon a time, there was a promise made to bless all the people of the world. And this is the stuff that God has to put up with to get us to Christ. It's beautiful. It's really quite beautiful. Baasha is the third king of the northern kingdom. We read about him very quickly in 1 Kings 15, 33. Baasha, the son of Ahijah, becomes king over Israel again. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, verse 34 says, walked in the ways of Jeroboam, who made Israel to sin. We have another king mentioned, Elha, in verses 1 Kings chapter 16, verses 6 and 8. Lets us know that Baasha died. This other guy reigned in his place. This was happening, obviously, while stuff in the south was happening. Verse number 8 lets us know. We'll kind of end our little scan of the northern kingdom by looking at this neat event. Elha was, if I recall correctly, he was deposed as king. He was overthrown. Elha had a servant, Zimri. What you do when you're reading these funky names is just kind of pick a pronunciation and roll with it. You might be right, you might be wrong, but all these guys are dead anyway. What are they going to say? Zimri, they came and they killed the king and took his place. You know, you quickly see what happens to your land when you kick God out. The children of Israel made it clear, we don't want God around anymore. And look at the mess. Look at the mess. Many in society today have made it clear, we don't want God around anymore, and look at the mess. So, after Zimri, there were two kings, Tibnah and Amri. We read about them in verses 21 and 22. And they had a bit of a split. You know, these were two kings ruling the northern kingdom simultaneously. That is, until one killed the other. Godlessness, godlessness, godlessness. Not a one of these 20 northern kings did what was right in God's sight. And it's a shame. Next week, good Lord willing, we will do much the same thing, but get after it a little quicker in our class and look at the southern kingdom, which I'm happy to report has some better news. Because there were some, not all, there were some good kings in the southern kingdom. We'll talk about them. Yeah, there were a couple. Sam's got a couple ready to talk to us about. We'll end there. Thank y'all very much.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.